Hello, and welcome to a special edition of whatever this is, whatever this is that I do. I'm speaking today. I was originally going to speak with Derek Jensen, who you'll all recognize from, the video I probably shared more than any other video when I was on Twitter, which was another reason I got banned, which was his, demolishing of queer theory and its links with pedophilia. So Derek said that Lier would be joining him today, and Lier is from, it's Lier Keith, am I right there? Lier is from Wolf, the very pugnacious and brilliant, American feminist, organization. So I thought that we all thought that because today was such a momentous day in the worst way possible, that it would be good to, do the three of us. I'm hearing a little bit of a weird kind of thing on my earphones, which might be my voice coming back. So if the volume's loud there, it might be worth turning it down a tiny bit. I don't know if you've, that's better. That's better. If you can hear me, then,
I can hear you great.
Great. Okay. Can you, Lier, can we start with you? First of all, actually, no, because we were going to start with Derek, I'll break with tradition and start with the man. Derek, I'll be ungentlemanly. Derek, can you just give a little description of who you are and what your role is in this particular debate around women's rights?
I'm an author. I got 25, 26 books out, something like that. And, I didn't really choose this particular fight. It came to me, and we can talk about the origin. I'm going to tell you the quick origin story or skip it.
Let's go back to that because I want to get on to Lier and get an introduction from her. Just a brief sketch.
So then I got introduced to this issue maybe 10 years ago, and it very quickly started receiving boatloads of death threats, and my female comrades started receiving boatloads of death and rape threats, and I very quickly didn't understand how those inevitable death and rape threats were not part of the public conversation more than they were. And also the whole ideology makes no sense to me. And when I would like to try to ask people, you know, okay, so what is a woman? They would threaten to kill me. And so I didn't understand how you could have, like, and we'll get into this more later, but I understand how you can have laws based on things that are not even, that they don't even define. It makes no sense to me. And one of the things I'm kind of known for is that I don't follow ideologies so much as I just, if something doesn't make sense, I say this doesn't make sense to me. And, that ended up, that along with my analysis of queer theory ended up costing me both of my publishers.
Three
publishers.
It was.
And I have found a new publisher, but we had to have a conversation about it. And I've gotten deplatformed at universities a whole bunch of times. I go into talk. My main two issues are talking about environmental destruction and talking about men's violence against women. Those are my two main issues. And I go to a university to talk about how this culture is destroying wild nature, and they will literally say to me, "You can't talk about that unless you will say the mantra, trans women are women."
Wow. Okay.
It's just, it makes no sense to me. I mean, it would not make sense to deplatform me anyway. I mean, I've never tried to deplatform anybody. I don't care what anybody else says. And nonetheless, it has nothing to do. I literally, because I'm such a nerd, I did the math one time and it's like, I don't remember what the numbers are, but it's basically 0.07% of the words I've ever written for print have been about this. Yeah. And there are people who then would agree with 99.93% of what I write, but then it doesn't matter because this 07 or whatever. And then one last thing, and then I'll shut up, is that also it just amazes me that a lot of the stuff I write is, frankly, fairly controversial. And the main thing I'm known for is writing that civilization will never be sustainable. And we don't have to go there because that's not the point of this. But I would have thought if I was going to get deplatformed, it would be for saying that civilization inherently is not sustainable. It would not be for saying that women should not be forced to share their most vulnerable spaces with males. I never thought that would be controversial. That's one of the things I don't get. I don't get understand how any of this is controversial.
We're all in the same boat there. Let me move on to Lierre very quickly. Lierre, can you just tell us a little bit, because I guess my audience would be mostly UK. Can you just tell us a little bit about Wolf and your involvement with them?
Sure. So I'm actually a founding member of Wolf. It was kind of my idea in the beginning. We, in the United States, the whole trans issue, you know, like everywhere else, it sort of snowballed. I mean, I have really been fighting this since the early 80s, but back then nobody else really noticed it. There was just a tiny handful of us who saw how bad this was going to be, though we had no idea. I mean, this whole time, there's like every barrier that's gotten broken. Mm. You know, I keep thinking as we approach it, the adults are now going to step into the room.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody is finally going to say, okay, this is crazy. It's time to pull back. Never happened. It's not happened. It doesn't matter what they're doing to women, to children, to women in prison, to women in homeless shelters, all the teenage girls. It's just every single step, sports, every single step of the way, the adults will not come into the room. So anyway, lots of fights about this in the 80s and 90s, but it was in very, very small groups of kind of feminist community, lesbian community. That was really who was taking the brunt of this, and nobody else really cared. And then we started to see more young women who were taking up these, you know, transing sort of practices. And, you know, there was no fighting it. I mean, they had so much money behind them and already had so much policy capture. And it just was more and more overwhelming. Anyway, you know, this just keeps multiplying. Derek and I have written a few books together, and we started an organization that was the environmental group work we were doing called Deep Green Resistance. And that our little tiny group of like 50 people was the only group in the United States that would stand up and say, we're not going to let men into women's spaces. And for that, I mean, nobody cares what we do. We're like this tiny little group of people. We were thrown from every last environmental group that anybody had ever worked in. We were just completely, we were depersoned, not just deplatformed. So everybody's political work just came to a grinding halt because we wouldn't let one man into the women's shower and the women's sleeping spaces. We just said no. So women say no, you're not allowed. So anyway, at that point I was like, this is crazy. Why is this little environmental group the only one who's willing to fight this? We actually need a radical feminist organization that will take this on, because it's not really in DGR's purview to do any of this. We had other work we were trying to do. And all of the mainstream feminist organizations in the United States had long since been captured. And some of them were actually early adopters, like NOW, it's the National Organization for Women. And they have done incredible things over, you know, my lifetime. But they were one of the original large groups of kind of liberal people who took this up as a civil rights cause. And, I mean, it was absolutely heartbreaking and stunning. Like, you know, you always, again, like somebody's going to say, okay, no. And they didn't. Yeah. They all just swallowed it whole. So it's like there was nobody left. Even like the National Lesbian Rights Task Force is controlled by men. It's all a group of men who think they are women in charge of the only group that fights for lesbian rights. I mean, it's just crazy, right? So we just need we need a group of women who are actually going to fight for women. So we founded Wolf in 2013. And we're pretty much there are now some other smaller groups who are also doing good stuff here that are, you know, that are newer, but we've actually filed lawsuits. So we filed amicus briefs, which are friend of the court briefs, against some of these various cases. So everybody knew this was coming yesterday. I don't think there's anyone who's surprised, but it is absolutely devastating to wake up this morning and know that it's done.
Well, you know, a bit of a part of me was hoping, that they were just, giving the children a pat on the head and trying to keep them quiet until they won the election. But my God, they've really gone for it. And like, I want to come back to Derek's, actually, before we move on, I just want to come to Derek's origin story, because I presume his origin story is what you're referring to when you said, yeah, could you tell us your side of it, Derek? Because I remember you were quite blindsided by it.
So DGR was going to have some sort of...
DGR is Deep Green Resistance. Just to remind people.
Yeah, sorry. Was going to have some sort of get together, a retreat or something. And there was one incident before, but I was not associated with that at all. And then the one that sort of pulled me in was, we're going to have some retreat. And then some guy I've never heard of writes to me and says, hi, I love your organization. I want to come down. But the thing is, I go by a woman's name and I like to ride motorcycles and wear dresses. And I guess women can ride motorcycles.
I know plenty of them.
Anyway, and I was then, he'd written to me, so I was tasked with writing back to him, and I wrote back and said, well, sure, you can come, that'd be great. And the thing is, if you won't be sleeping in the women's section, but, you know, I understand that you don't want to sleep in the men's section, so you can sleep in your own room, which is something we didn't offer to anybody else.
True.
You can sleep in your own room, and we will post guards outside the bathroom when you go if you're so scared. Mm-hmm. And I'd never do this now, but I was...
It's absurd. Nobody was going to hurt
him. I know it was going to hurt him. That's why I would say I would never do this now. Anyway, the point is that I said, you can come. That'd be great. We will call you the name you've chosen, but we won't call you she. You won't stay with the women. You won't have to stay with the men. We offered a separate space, which is
yes.
Over and
what
over.
People do.
What people do.
And
with the same result.
And immediately he wrote back, I have Crohn's disease. He wrote back and said, I hope your Crohn's disease kills you.
And, wow.
And then within.
But he said it in much more graphic terms. I mean, that's a nice version of what he said. So.
What?
And no, then, that's never, I mean, you just multiply this out. Yeah.
Yes.
And then within a day or two, I'd received a boatload of death threats. The women in DGR had received a whole bunch of rape and death threats. They threatened to kill. Did they threaten to rape the children?
I can't remember, just kill them. They were going to do horrible things to the children.
Yeah, they were going to do terrible things to the children of female DGR members. And I thought, well, that's a really encouraging argument for the inclusion.
Yeah.
I didn't understand.
They prove our point every time.
I didn't understand why that didn't end the whole discussion right there.
It never does.
But then somehow we ended up being the bad people out of all this.
Mm-hmm. That was your introduction to it. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. And until then, I mean, even though I knew you, we had talked about the issue a little bit, but we had not. I mean, it's just nothing I ever frankly thought about very much.
Well, that leads me on to something, actually. Lierre, you were saying that you've been fighting this since the 80s. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems to me that it's only recently the word trans now means both actual transsexuals and anyone who wears blue eyeshadow or whatever it is, you know? When this kind of toxic trans activism that we're seeing now, was that in play in the 80s? Did you notice that happening?
Yes, I would say yes. But
really?
My experience, I would say 1982, 1983 was kind of when I got old enough to really enter this whole world.
What form would it take?
So you would go to a women's dance or a lesbian bar or some kind of gathering that was for feminists, and there would be that one guy who would turn up. And at that point in time, other women knew that they were bad news, that they were stalkers, that they were violent, that they were unhinged, and that they didn't belong there. Even if they were perfectly kind, they still didn't belong there. But there was always a group of women who would approach him, circle him, and tell him he wasn't welcome. And they had no legal right to be there at that point. I mean, it was easy to escort them out. That doesn't mean that they didn't do damage, because like all good predators, they know how to find the vulnerable. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can run through all my anecdotes from those years, the very vulnerable women, young women, women my age, who were sucked in by these guys, you know, in the months and years of abuse that would then follow. But they're stalkers. They're obsessive. This is all about a sexual fetish. You know, they're all autogynephiliacs. Half of them are sociopaths. I'm sorry to have to say this so bluntly, but that is who they are. And there are women in, certainly in the women's community, who have been stalked for decades by some of these guys, and nobody does anything. You're not even allowed to talk about it. Nobody believes them. And it's terrifying because nothing stops them. It's like all stalkers. There's no way to stop them. They get a new obsession and then they move out of your life, or they die. That's the ways that you are free from a stalker. So I saw all that, you know, even in the early 80s. There weren't very many of them yet. Pornography had not taken over the culture. I mean, right now the porn industry is essentially churning at these guys like tribbles. But at that time there weren't very many. Also, the internet didn't exist.
Yes, that's what confused me, I think, because I was thinking, I thought of it as purely an internet phenomenon. Sorry, I interrupted
you. There were always a few, and they were the ones, I mean, gender identity disorder is what it used to be called, and that was introduced to the DSM-IV in 1980. So mm-hmm. they had already had a whole decade of political pressure trying to get that diagnosis created by the medical establishment and then pressure them to include it. And it was so they could get those horrifying surgeries. That's what they wanted, because that's the ultimate expression of their fetish, is they want to have, you know, like female body parts. So the only way to do that is to get it paid by through insurance. So they had to have some kind of medical diagnosis. So they created that, and then they got that put into the medical literature. And then in 2013, I think they had that change to quote gender dysphoria, but it's the same thing. And it's the same. These are politically mm-hmm. created entities. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can say that about a lot of diagnoses. I understand that there's always, you know, sort of a social component, but this was very clearly, you know, political advocates with a whole bunch of money, put this kind of pressure on psychiatrists to get that into the DSM-IV so that they could get their surgeries and their hormones paid for. And so that was 1980 when that started. So there's a whole decade before that where they're working really hard to get that done.
When was Renee Richards?
What was it, 70? I don't even remember. I was a young kid, so.
What was Renee Richards?
Go ahead.
Renee Richards is a guy who forced his way onto the women's tennis circuit and took his case to the Supreme Court and won in I don't know what year, that made it so. I mean, this is in, I thought it was before the 70s, but this is in the 70s.
Was it in the 60s? It might have been.
It was 60s or 70s.
He was the first big one.
Yes.
And he paved the way for all, I mean, they all talk about him as their hero, him and Buffalo Bill, of course.
And the Supreme Court in the United States ruled, this is 60s or 70s, ruled that he would be allowed into the women's tennis circuit. And
really, the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
And so that remained, yeah, was he playing for a while, or what happened?
He was playing, but I think he was too
old. He was
old
at that point, so he wasn't really a contender. I mean, he was looking at his 50s or his 60s at that
point.
Yeah,
he's pretty old.
He was pretty old.
Okay. Oh. 60s.
Yeah.
So, but why didn't that open the door to more male-bodied people playing sports?
Well, it did. It's just, it took time for them to capture the culture.
Right.
Because at that point, there was still, I think, a lot of, I don't know, shame. I don't know what you want to call it. There was a lot of secrecy around it. They were still all meeting in private little groups, and you'd go away for a weekend was kind of what they did. And they would like take over a little resort or a hotel, and they would have these conferences where they all dressed up in clothes and wandered around together. But then they would go home to their lives and not talk about it. And the internet broke all that down, where now you can find them in 3 seconds. Before, I mean, it was like, anything good and bad that was kind of under the surface, you had to know somebody who knew somebody to get into any of this.
Mm,
mm. You have to remember, I mean, you're old enough, you probably remember some of this, but it was a different world.
I wasn't really aware of how insane the positions had become until, I guess, just after I wrote an episode of the IT Crowd about a trans relationship, which wasn't really. It was just a silly joke about a man being still you know, still kind of conditioned as a man while he was, you know, being a woman. But anyway, the response to that was so ferocious that I kind of suddenly got interested. I kind of thought, well, this is a different kind of pushback than anything I've ever got. It's so crazy. And as I was listening to the arguments, I started to realize when they were saying trans women are women, I realized they mean this literally.
Yeah, they do. You know, okay, so what is a woman? And then you get a circle is a thing we call a circle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Yeah. It's like a woman is anyone who feels like a woman. That's not a definition.
So this is something that really burns my grits, is that if you ask them to define woman, and this will happen with people who are supposedly educated too, is they will then do the circular definition, somebody who identifies as a woman. And one of the reasons this really bothers me is because I don't know what this would be counted in the UK, but in the United States it's called fifth grade or fourth grade, and you have this when you're nine or 10.
Yeah.
Where you learn how a definition works.
Yeah. There
are two conditions to a definition. A definition must be verifiable / falsifiable. So if you say, you, like Stephen King gives the definition of a writer to be someone who has created a piece of writing that then has had this piece published and has received a check that they use to pay their power bill.
Yeah.
And the point is that's falsifiable. You either have or you haven't.
Yes.
And everything is falsifiable. So did you or did you not kill that person on September 12th? You know, either you did or you didn't, and we can prove it or not. That's how law works. Mm-hmm. And that's how definitions work. Square. It's, you know, is this, here's a, you know, we know what a square is. It's a quadrilateral with equal sides and 90 degree angles. Well, so is this a square? No, because it has three sides. That's falsifiable. Mm-hmm. Are you a vegan? Yes, I'm a vegan. What did you have for dinner last night? I had pulled pork. Well, no, you're not a vegan.
Yeah.
Okay, you're with me so far. Is that a bicycle? No, it has four wheels.
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, it has to be falsifiable / verifiable. Are you a member of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame? Okay, second one is it can't be tautological. Tautological means, I love this. The first rule of the tautology club is the first rule of the tautology club.
Right,
A tautology is something that defines itself.
Yeah.
So my point is, not only are they not defining women, but politicians, everybody else, they're not even using a correct definition. They would fail fifth grade. And my voice is getting thin and reedy because this bothers me so much. It's just so stupid. And not only that, but laws are based on definitions. So
yeah.
I once got a parking ticket when I was 16 for parking in a bus stop. And I mean, that's just something a 16-year-old might do. This 16-year-old might do. Anyway, they defined a bus stop is where the curb is red or the curb is blue or whatever color they are at the bus stop. That's how it's defined.
That's how you know. That's how you know you're breaking the law.
Yeah. And so they're putting stuff into law, which has no definitions whatsoever. And that,
yes.
This, as well as everything else, is boggling, even dropping off the misogyny, dropping off all of that stuff. It's like, you know, two countries, do we or do we not have a treaty? Well, that depends on how we define treaty.
We define
the treaty. Yes, we have a treaty because I said we have a treaty that we identify as having a treaty. Because identification means nothing.
Well, and that is what the laws say. I mean, I've read them, like the state of New Jersey. It's a gender-related identity is a gender identity. Like, we haven't defined a single thing here. We have a circle is a thing that's a circle. Like, what?
I've never heard.
Because it's nonsensical.
There's
nothing to it, and they won't let us say that out loud. It's as good as it gets.
I've never heard the same definition of gender twice. Never heard a stable definition of the word gender. Never. Now, listen, that's a good moment to move on to what happened today. Can you tell us what Biden got up to today?
So he did the thing he promised. Well, I mean, we all knew this was coming. In the United States, we have The president has the power to put out these things called executive orders.
Yes. And
they are legal. It's not specifically in the Constitution, but the Supreme Court has ruled a long time ago that they are allowed to do this. This is one of the powers that's sort of implied in the Constitution. And they can be very controversial because they're not laws. We have a process to pass laws, and that's why we have a Congress, which is the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's bicameral. And they're supposed to be the people who represent us. And it's the, you know, we have three branches of government, and they're all supposed to be checks and balances. This was all done very carefully by the framers of the Constitution so that nobody had more power than anybody else. And there were ways to always sort of keep it. So there's, that's supposed to be the people's house, is the House of Representatives, and they're supposed to pass the laws. And the president does have this ability to do this other thing sometimes. We are not without remedy. They are subject to judicial review. We can try to bring, you know, legal remedies toward this, but it's going to be long and slow and awful. So they are allowed to do it. He's done it. I mean, one good example is President Truman desegregated the military using an executive order. So just by fiat, he said, we're not going to have racial segregation in the U.S. Army anymore. And it worked. It's the Army. They did what he said. And it was actually pretty, like, it really wasn't a big deal. They just did it. And it was one of the first institutions, you know, big institutions in the United States that was desegregated. And it, you know, it's a hierarchy. They did what they were told. And it, before you knew it, there were black people ordering white people around, and nobody really thought anything about it. So it can work. But it is a way to subvert democracy because, you know, we are supposed to have this other process. So
could this
jump ahead? Go ahead.
Well, I remember Trump signed a bunch of them when he started.
Oh, yeah. They all do it. They all do it. But usually it's fairly minor things.
But, okay. All right. Because I'm always looking forward to, because I, my optimism is still barely, I mean, it's just a little flickering flame by now, but it's still there. Could this have been, because I don't see Camilla. Yes. Sorry. I won't attempt it again. I don't see her as, really having any patience with this nonsense. And I wonder, is some of this a sop to the left? And is making an executive order something that, because it could be challenged, perhaps it's just a way of virtue signaling?
No.
Okay, there goes the last little thing.
I mean, the Democrats have been, it's institutional capture. They have been completely captured by this ideology. There's, and I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but there is so much money behind them.
Where, you said that before. Where is the money coming from?
The pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
And also, quickly tell the Pritzker Obama story.
Well, you know, we had a president named Barack Obama, and he was, in part at least, created by the Pritzker money, and that's a huge pharmaceutical family.
Hedge fund. Hedge fund and hotel.
And hotel. I mean, they own just, they're huge. I mean, it's just this vast, you know, corporate. But anyway, it's owned by this family, the Pritzkers, and they are from Chicago, and they bought him his first Senate seat.
They bought him his first state senate.
In the state of Illinois.
They bet on him when he was
a young rookie. And they were right because they got him all the way to the presidency, but they were one of the main backers of Obama all the way through to the presidency. So.
And they're also the governor of Illinois, Pritzker.
Yep. It's exactly. So they're in politics and they've got all this money, and it's like the Koch brothers or any of these. It's just, I mean, they're just, there's these huge, you just viciously rich people. I mean, the amount of money that some of these groups have is, it's just beyond comprehension to normal people. And they do control the world economy.
Yeah.
I mean, what, 500 of them or something? And they own everything. So.
And one of the Pritzkers is.
Go ahead.
And one of the Pritzkers, goes by the name of Jennifer.
And he was in the Obama administration. So that was the payoff. You know, and this is legal in the United States. That's the problem. It's legal graft. It's legal, you know, extortion. It's they are legally allowed to own the government. This is just the Supreme Court ruled that corporations were people. That was done a long time ago. And then they ruled that because they're people, they have First Amendment rights. So you can't stop them from donating to political causes, including candidates. All of this is done completely above the board. And we're never going to get democracy back until somebody puts an end to this.
Yeah.
And so that's the root cause of a lot of this has infected American politics kind of across the board. And so many people, both left and right, feel utterly disenfranchised, and they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just that the magic trick is done completely in public view.
Yes.
These very powerful people with all the money, you know, like the top 2%, get to decide everything. So when people feel like they're not listened to and their lives don't matter and they're poorer and poorer every year and all these, it's all true. It's just, you know, it's not a secret cabal. They're actually out in public with financial statements anybody can look at, and they are allowed to give untold millions of dollars to create a political candidate. And that is how everybody in the United States gets into office. It's not just Obama. I'm not picking on him. But the people who picked him were the Chicago group, and that's the Pritzkers, and they had all this money, and they got him into the local, you know, a senator in Illinois, and then they got him a seat in the federal government, and then they made him president, and then it was payback time. So he went ahead and did all his executive orders, which destroyed everything that women had. So the last, you know, year or two of the Obama administration, all of this came to pass because he was paying them back. And then Trump made it all go away. It was like one of the only good things Trump did. And then we had the election, and, you know, there was no good outcome. There was never dreaded an election like this.
I know. Yeah. That was the way,
there was nothing to hope for.
Yeah.
No matter where, it was like there was going to be hell no matter what happened. So here we are. So on his first day, 5 hours president, he destroyed the legal concept of women as a discrete political class. We no longer exist. It's over. It's done. So he signed an executive order. It's based on, we had a Supreme Court ruling last year. It was called the Bostock decision, which ruled, there was three decisions that they combined into one. And the one was good. It said that gays and lesbians can't be discriminated against in the workplace. And that's fine. Nobody has a problem with that. But they also ruled essentially that if a man says he's a woman, that's called gender identity, and he is allowed to do whatever he wants. He is to be treated as a woman for legal purposes. And so that's it. So, but using that, the Bostock decision, Biden has now signed this thing, that this executive order that basically replaces the word sex with sexual orientation and gender identity.
Okay, let me see if there's a tiny flicker of optimism left in one of the things that I did quite like today was, I could be wrong, but I think the last 4 years, America has been understandably quite traumatized and distracted by the absolute insanity that's been coming out of the White House on a 24-hour, you know, basis. You know, it's been exhaustingly insane, you know, to such an extent that I gave up following it. I just stopped being interested in Trump about 2-3 years ago, you know, and I started off when Trump won, I actually had to go on anti-anxiety medication because it so distressed me. I found it so, you know, it's the kind of anti-intellectualism that you were talking about, Derek, that we're seeing now come from the left. But I thought that this was the ultimate expression of it. I didn't realize that the left could beat them or could go toe to toe with Trump on anti-intellectualism and anti-science. Where was I going? Yeah, no, this was it. And I, like, just as Trump, was, you know, starting to lose, I became aware of Karen Davis, who's, a woman of color. You know, Karen, who does her YouTube's, You're Kidding Right. And, you know, I just thought, oh, that's great. A new voice. This is a voice I haven't heard. And I was wondering, she kind of poo-pooed this idea, but I was wondering whether it was because now that the distraction of Trump is gone, are people waking up to the insanity of the gender ideologues? And I wonder whether once people know what's going to happen to sport and their private spaces and their daughters, when they go into, you know, when they're supposed to be safe, they're actually not as safe anymore. I wonder whether people, a lot of women in America might have woken up and realized, oh, I'm a TERF. Right. You know? I mean, do you think that's possible?
Well, my group, Wolf, actually did a poll, which had never been done before. So we hired a reputable polling firm just to do that thing where you call people on the phone and you ask them their opinion. And across the board, 2/3 of the people who were asked said that they absolutely opposed putting men in women's prisons, putting men in women's sports, putting men in women's homeless shelters. The normies are actually still okay.
Yeah, that's what I always read.
Normal people who don't understand what's coming, they just think trans is like gay plus. Oh, these, there's somehow poor suffering people who need a little help. That's all they know. It hasn't hit them yet. So it's possible that as this unrolls, you know, there'll be more pushback. And if we can give them an easy way to understand it, keep explaining what has happened, and, you know, at least have some of these lawsuits rolling, there, we, you know, they'll have something to join. They'll have a way to understand it, and then they can join, hopefully, and help us fight this. Because we're, I mean, how many people are in Wolf? 300? I mean, we're this tiny little group with no money and essentially all volunteer. And we're fighting like these massive corporations with billions of dollars. It's definitely David and Goliath.
Tell them about the lawsuit with the three girls from Connecticut.
Oh, you can talk
about
that.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, there was, we've had it, there's been a number of lawsuits in the United States, and the one was in the state of Connecticut.
Is this not still ongoing?
Oh, I don't even remember the status of that one to tell you. There's been so much. Do you remember?
I don't know the status.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so there were the three.
I should know this.
Three
girls.
Three girls from Connecticut. Ran track, and, they got creamed by, two boys.
Yes. I remember the video. They were nearly lapping them.
Oh, there's no point in even running. It's
yeah.
And so those three girls, one of whom I just have to say is the daughter of a former major league pitcher, which I think helps.
It does. Yeah.
Anyway, they sued. I have no idea where that case stands.
Mm.
So there's a few of these little cases that are kind of floating around still. So, I mean, any one of them could pop out the other end and be okay. But this is a major effort. And the other problem, of course, in the United States is that almost entirely the people who are fighting this are right wing. It's conservatives.
Yes. And I know there's a bit of controversy around that with Wolf and so on, especially in the UK, because if I can just explain a little bit to any Americans who are watching, there's a real kind of strong history of left wing activism associated with feminists in the UK. So Wolf did kind of join hands for a period. I'm not sure if you're still connected with the Heritage Foundation, I believe they're called.
Okay, so we never did an event at Heritage. The Heritage event was a bunch of the parents of girls, especially who had, you know, undertaken these medical procedures.
Yes.
This had been going on for years, and they couldn't get any help from anyone. And I mean, just to hear the parents' stories was just so heartbreaking because.
Well, that's what Posey said.
They went to the schools and they went to the doctor and they went to the therapist and they, you know, they tried to talk to their state legislatures and the doors in their faces. And meanwhile, you know, their girl children are taking dangerous drugs and, you know, approaching being of legal age to seriously mutilate their bodies, and nobody would help. And the only people who would listen, these were all left-leaning people. I mean, they were, you know, lifelong contributors to the ACLU and Planned Parenthood. And the only people who would listen was this group at Heritage. So Heritage did put on that event. There were two Wolf members who, Kara Dansky was the president of Wolf at that point, and she, you know, presented our view of this, a feminist view of what is this gender identity stuff. And then Jennifer Chavez read the testimonies. The parents themselves were not allowed to be in that room because they have to stay anonymous. If any of the social workers find out, they would have their children taken away from them. And I want everybody to understand the chilling nature of this. You cannot defend your children from this predatory ideology and permanent physical harm without threat of your children being taken away from you. That's how bad it is. So they sat in a separate room and listened. They couldn't be in the same room. So somebody had to read their testimony. So we did that. And that's the only connection we have had. And raked over the coals as if we're, you know, the new Nazi party, you know.
Yeah, I think it's perhaps a sensitivity over here. I don't know. That's kind of just born out of, you know, the accusation. I mean, they've been quite successful in painting, like it's crazy, especially in the UK, because you're talking about absolute heroes of left-wing activism, like Linda Bellos and Helen Steele. And they've been managing to kind of do this. And Posey Parker said the same thing to me. She said that when she met the parents, she didn't know the Heritage connection. She didn't know anything about Heritage, I think. And she just responded to these women who were so happy that someone was finally listening to them as they were trying to protect their children from mutilating their bodies. You know,
it was an extraordinary meeting. I mean, I was there, and I got to tell you, when Posey walked into the room, it was like Joan of Arc had entered. I mean, mothers just started crying, and they said to her, they were like, "Why do you do this? It's not affecting you. Your children aren't caught up in this. Like, why are you doing this for us? You're the only person who's ever listened." Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was just so extraordinary. Like, they love her. Finally, somebody gave them a voice. And everyone who has ever criticized us, it's like, they don't understand. Like, if it was your child this was happening to, like, do you have no feeling for what these mothers are going through? This is permanent damage to these girls. Well, the boys too. I mean, Jennings.
He
was 17 years old.
Yeah.
My head explodes every time I think about that poor kid.
Yeah. And it's often, it's
orgasm with another human being.
It's a certain kind of parent. From him,
ever had a relationship.
Yeah.
Entire life. How are we doing this to little? The hatred of the human animal. Just all politics aside, I don't understand the glee with which people are doing this.
We had an entire nation celebrate the
removal
castration
of this young boy,
a young boy.
Yeah.
I just don't even have words for the horror of this. And this is supposed to be some kind of human rights movement.
Well, I compared it to a Cronenberg movie. That's the thing that the thing I originally compared to a Cronenberg movie was Magdalene Burns did a video about a young woman who said that her workplace rules on how to dress were sexist. They insisted that the men wear suits. So she wanted to wear a suit. She was identifying as a man. So she said she removed her breasts to fit in with this sexist workplace rule, you know? And it's like so true that someone said, you know, feminists, actual feminists, I won't even call them radical feminists. They're just feminists.
Actual feminists, yes.
Actual feminists. Actual feminists want to change a sexist society. While these new kinds of, you know, non-pseudo-feminists are trying to get kids to change their bodies to fit it. No. You know, it's mind blowing to me. It really is. Every day it takes my breath away, you know. And like, there's a thing when you have as a parent, and it's a very simple thing. Are the kids safe? Great. We can relax.
Right.
That's all it is. Are the kids safe? Great. We can relax. And I haven't been able to relax for 3 years because it's been 3 years since I realized that kids are doing this, that kids are undergoing things they have no understanding of. I didn't think I wanted kids when I was, until I met my wife, actually, you know, until I was in my late 30s. I didn't think I wanted kids. I thought you couldn't bring kids into a world like this because it's too, you know, and the joy of finally doing it, you know, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. So the idea that a kid of 17 who's just thinking about parties and having a good time as they should, mm-hmm. could negate a whole section of their future. It's mind blowing to me. Absolutely mind blowing. Sorry, there's no question there.
It's the same. Like, I'm just speechless over all of this. Like, in this entire culture is now thinking that this is somehow okay to do this to people. Especially on the left, though certainly on the right as well. Like, the idea that you would interfere with people's physical development, their, you know, capacity for adult relationships, for future fertility, like, everybody gets that such a supreme human rights violation to do that to somebody. And now all of a sudden it's like whiplash, and we're supposed to embrace this as like this wondrous frontier of human rights.
I mean, it's quite frightening. I just posted up a piece by someone. Actually, let me read the end of it to you, if I can quickly. No, I've closed all my windows, so I can't read it. But basically, they pointed out that the BBC just reported an 82% rise in women committing child sexual abuse.
All right.
Between the years of 2015 and 2014 and 2019, I think it was. Nope. Absolutely no. Absolutely not.
We know what's going on.
We know what's going on. And, but the thing I find most frightening about it, right, is that the police are, recording these criminals. So first of all, you've got the kind of criminal class who have decided that this is a great way to get one over on authorities by calling themselves trans. Okay. And then you have a second level of the, police, putting them down as female offenders. And then you have a third level of the BBC reporting this.
Right.
As if there's nothing to talk about in terms of, you know, them recording gender identity, recording these men as women. It's outrageous. This is every level of society is engaged in an act of deception.
Yep.
And it really, it's so frightening because those ordinary people you're talking about, those, you know, people who have kids and so on, who are they going to turn to? Who are they going to turn to fight this stuff, to fight for their kids, you know?
Well, I hate to say this because I can't stand them, but they'll turn to the conservatives.
Yeah, because the conservatives are waiting. They at least have some analysis.
So I wanna,
and they've got stables of lawyers, at least over here, of some of the conservative, I mean, they're huge groups, and they've got, you know, 50 lawyers ready to go, and I mean,
oh, I think
so. I can tell you where they're going to end up, and it's not what I want. I'd much rather they come to our side and understand that this is, you know, a supreme form of patriarchy, but we don't have much besides righteousness and truth on our side. We don't have the money. I mean, we're going to do our best, trust me, but I know who they're going to find first. It's not us.
They're going to, I can't believe the conservatives haven't made more hay with this already. I mean, it's crazy that they're not, I guess they just kind of, I don't know, I guess they were distracted as well, but as soon as the right realizes that this is an open goal, they're going to be kicking balls into it all day. And the people who will suffer will be gay people, will be trans people. You know, actual trans people, not fetishists and grifters and sports cheats. You know, the people with dysphoria, they are who will suffer. You know, it's really appalling how this is being allowed to happen. You know, anyway, sorry, I keep making statements and not asking questions. It's terrible. So in the short term, we're coming up on 50 minutes, so I better round it up soon. But in the short term, Lierre, what does Wolf plan to do to fight back against some of these, recent developments? I mean, well, presumably you knew it was coming, so.
Yeah, well, we have, right away, there's a petition you can sign, and we're begging everybody to write to the president, the vice president. We're going to try to flood them with as many letters and phone calls as we can. And then we're scrambling to try to see what are the legal options here to try to get this before some kind of a judicial review or a court, because this can't stand. You know, always the problem is you need a plaintiff. So we need, you know, at least one person to come forward and say, okay, I have been harmed by this in this way. So there's already, we've got all kinds of, you know, there's women in prison in Washington State, in Texas, in Illinois, who have already been raped by men who say they're women, who were put in their prison cells, when there's all those cases that are kind of winding through. And there's some sports cases as well that are happening right now. But, you know, we need a plaintiff on this, that, you know, since Biden has done this, so there's going to have to be victims. This is always the problem.
Yeah.
You have to wait for a victim, and it's horrible. Like, cause we know what's going to happen to women now and girls.
Yeah.
And there's not a human rights group on the planet that doesn't understand the necessity for a women's girls' education, that they need safe private toileting facilities, and we know why. So,
well,
what is coming down the pike at all these teenage girls, and we have to wait for one of them to be victimized and willing to come forward. So,
it's
horrible.
Yeah.
The Wolf Media Guide too. I think that's really important.
Oh yeah. Well, we did last month. We put out a media guide. So, I don't know how it is in your country, but here the Associated Press has these like standardized, like, they're like guides to like what language to use for different issues. So there's, there's one for suicide. There's one for, you know, how to report on different issues. So we put out one that was for how to talk about sex and this sort of gender issue. Because right now, of course, the the trans have won. They have their own style guide and everybody uses it. So we've tried to push back by having, you know, in plain language, this is what this means. And instead of saying this, say this.
Like, give an example. Instead of saying blah, blah, say.
Well, instead of saying like transgender, whatever, you would say, you know, just call them men because that's what they are.
So there was, I just read last night that there was some woman arrested for, an 18-year-old woman was arrested for having child porn in Scotland.
Right.
And all fantasies of murdering babies. So you would, instead of saying a woman, the style guide would say a 17-year-old boy or man or whatever he is.
Right.
It's extraordinary that, sorry, again, I'm going to make a statement. It's extraordinary that the press are playing along with this. Do they not realize, I'm very surprised that ordinary journalists aren't standing up and saying, this is insane, we're misleading people.
Complete institutional capture. The thing is, if you go behind the scenes, and I've heard this from a few different sources, like, there actually are journalists who hate this, but they know they'll lose their jobs.
Sure.
It's the same everywhere. Like, they can't put their heads above the parapet. I think if one does, you know, maybe more will follow, but.
Yeah.
But we've seen, Graham, we have seen what happens to people who speak out on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're like me. They're all on Substack. You know.
Some of them are making more money on Substack.
Oh, Substack. Substack is, the only thing is, I think that the market will become saturated after a while. If every cancelled writer, has a Substack, then there's going to be too many emails, you know.
And this is not unique to this issue. We saw this in the build up to the Iraq invasion, that all the journalists fell in line. And in 1990 or so, I interviewed Richard Manning, who formerly was a journalist, an environmental journalist, who got fired because he refused to go along with the line that cutting down forests improves the health of the forest. And that was the standard line, you know, through the 80s and 90s, that there are, I mean, it's not just this issue. There was one time a really good series of articles came out about deforestation in the Spokane paper where I live. And I was talking to one of the journalists about this, and he said, yeah, we were able to get by with it this time, but I got to tell you, if it would have been about car lots, we would have all gotten fired because car lots do the main advertising for newspapers.
Right. So
this is, and I remember in the late 90s, I interviewed Robert McChesney about how this works, that all the journalists get in line. And he said, it's not like the Soviet Union or our ideas of the Soviet Union where somebody walks in with a gun. Instead, if you don't toe the journalistic line, you find yourself no longer working on interesting articles, but instead doing the garage sale.
Yes.
And that's how, I mean, it still surprises me. But, I mean, you and I, all three of us, are examples of the reward system that disrewards people for telling the truth and rewards people for going along with the crap, just in terms of our lives. And then there was one more thing I was going to say. But if you have something to say, go ahead. I don't remember now.
I was just going to point out that I met a Guardian journalist who worked on the property beat, and they lost all work from the Guardian because they signed, I think they signed a letter calling, I think it might have been our letter actually, that we were calling for a less toxic conversation, for Stonewall to agree to a less, this is the UK charity.
A journalist who signed
the property
calling for a less toxic discussion should be fired.
Should be shunned. Should be burned in a fire.
But when you think of this, a journalist who covers property, nothing to do with any of these issues, would never write a word about it, and lost their income because of this. Absolutely outrageous. And this is a supposedly progressive newspaper, you know?
I know what I was going to say is, there was a journalist said to me that, he used to do some articles critical of this. And although this journalist is a muckraker, he said that, he was no longer going to write them because the trans had threatened to kill his children.
Yeah.
And
at that point, everybody just caves, which I understand. If they threatened to kill my dogs, well, I'd hunt them down and kill them probably. But I mean, I get it. I'm going to say that jokingly, but I know, like, when you have, you know, the precious thing, the person that you need to protect, it's.
I also know.
They back off. I get it. It's
I know. Terrifying. I know also a somebody who has reported on massively controversial issues and has handled them with complete calm, who did a gender critical article and said that of all the articles he'd ever done that had been controversial, for which he'd gotten in a lot of trouble, he had never, ever, ever seen anything remotely like the backlash. It was just absolutely vicious.
He said they were deranged.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
That's what's so. I mean, that's what's so. This whole conversation is deranging. I mean, they're asking us to believe things that are not true, and if we don't believe them, they'll threaten us. They'll threaten our livelihoods or even our kids. You know, it's a tough place to be. It's a really tough place to be. But listen, I better leave it at that. For the moment, Derek, we're going to talk again in a few weeks, which I'm delighted about, because this wasn't what I was expecting tonight, but I'm really glad we did it because I think it's such an important day, and I hope that it wakes a lot of people up. I'm going to keep the flame of optimism burning just a tiny, tiny bit. And Lierre, I hope Wolf goes from strength to strength. I hope that this, really puts some support behind you. I'll put all the links to anything you like in okay. the thing below. So just send me what you need to send me. And hang around and I'll say goodbye to you before, but I'll say goodbye to these people first. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us and we'll see you again soon. Derek and Lierre.